genuine and from God, or whether it is spurious and from the devil. So that, to use the figure of that gospel parable, which you discussed on a former occasion, in which we are bidden to become good money changers, 98, we may be able to see the figure of the true king stamped on the coin, and to detect what is not stamped on coin that is current. And that, as you said in yesterday's talk, using an ordinary expression, we may reject it as counterfeit, under the teaching of that skill which you treated of with sufficient fullness and detail, and showed ought to belong to the man who is spiritually a good money changer of the gospel. For of what good will it be to have recognized the value of that virtue and grace if we do not know how to seek for it and to gain it? Chapter 10. The Answer: How True Discretion May Be Gained. Then Moses. True discretion, said he, is only secured by true humility. And of this humility the first proof is given by reserving everything, not only what you do, but also what you think, for the scrutiny of the elders, so as not to trust at all in your own judgment, but to acquiesce in their decisions in all points, and to acknowledge what ought to be considered good or bad by their traditions. 99. And this habit will not only teach a young man to walk in the right path through the true way of discretion, but will also keep him unhurt by all the crafts and deceits of the enemy. For a man cannot possibly be deceived who lives not by his own judgment, but according to the example of the elders. Nor will our crafty foe be able to abuse the ignorance of one who is not accustomed from false modesty to conceal all the thoughts which rise in his heart, but either checks them or suffers them to remain, in accordance with the ripened judgment of the elders. For a wrong thought is enfeebled at the moment that it is discovered, and even before the sentence of discretion has been given. The foul serpent is by the power of confession dragged out, so to speak, from his dark underground cavern, and in some sense shown up and sent away in disgrace. For evil thoughts will hold sway in us just so long as they are hidden in the heart, and that you may gather still more effectually the power of this judgment, I will tell you what Abbot Serapion, S-E-R-A-P-I-O-N, did. 100. And what he used often to tell to the younger brethren for their edification. Chapter 11. The words of Abbot Serapion on the decline of thoughts that are exposed to others, and also on the danger of self-confidence. While, said he, I was still a lad, in stopping with Abbot Theonas, T-H-E-O-N-A-S, 101, this habit was forced upon me by the assaults of the enemy, that after I had supped with the old man at the ninth hour, I used every day secretly to hide a biscuit in my dress, which I would eat on the sly later on without his knowing it. And though I was constantly guilty of the theft with the consent of my will, and the want of restraint that springs from desire that has grown inveterate, yet when my unlawful desire was gratified, I would come to myself and torment myself over the theft committed in a way that overbalanced the pleasure I had enjoyed in the eating. And when I was forced, not without grief of heart, to fulfill day after day this most heavy task required of me, so to speak, by Pharaoh's taskmasters, instead of bricks, and could not escape from this cruel tyranny, and yet was ashamed to disclose the secret theft to the old man, it chanced by the will of God that I was delivered from the yoke of this voluntary captivity. When certain brethren had sought the old man's cell with the object of being instructed by him. And when after supper the spiritual conference had begun to be held, and the old man, in answer to the questions which they had propounded, was speaking about the sin of gluttony, and the dominion of secret thoughts, and showing their nature, and the awful power which they have so long as they are kept secret, I was overcome by the power of the discourse, and was conscience-stricken and terrified, as I thought that these things were mentioned by him, because the Lord had revealed to the old man my bosom secrets. And first I was moved to secret sighs, and then my heart's compunction increased, and I openly burst into sobs and tears, and produced from the folds of my dress, which shared my theft and received it, the biscuit which I had carried off in my bad habit to eat on the sly. and I laid it in the midst, and lying on the ground and begging for forgiveness, confess how I used to eat one every day in secret, and with copious tears implored them to entreat the Lord to free me from this dreadful slavery. Then the old man, "Have faith, my child," said he. "Without any words of mine, your confession frees you from this slavery, for you have today triumphed over your victorious adversary by laying him low by your confession in a manner which more than makes up for the way in which you were overthrown by him through your former silence, as when, never confuting him with your own answer or that of another, you had allowed him to lord over you, according to that saying of Solomon's, 'Because sentence is not speedily pronounced against the evil, the heart of the children of men is full within them to do evil.'" 102. "And therefore, after this exposure of him, that evil spirit will no longer be able to vex you, nor will that foul serpent henceforth make his lurking place in you, as he has been dragged out into light from the darkness by your life-giving confession." The old man had not finished speaking when, lo, a burning lamp, proceeding from the folds of my dress, filled the cell with a sulphurous smell, so that the pungency of the odor scarcely allowed us to stay there. And the old man, assuming his admonition, said, "Lo, the Lord has visibly confirmed to you the truth of my words, so that you can see with your eyes how he who was the author of his passion has been driven out from your heart by your life-giving confession, and know that the enemy who has been exposed will certainly no longer find a home in you, as his expulsion is made manifest." And so, as the old man declared, said he, "The sway of that diabolical tyranny over me has been destroyed by the power of this confession, and stilled forever, so that the enemy has never even tried to force upon me any more the recollection of his desire, nor have I ever felt myself seized with the passion of that furtive longing." And this meaning we see is neatly expressed in the figure in Ecclesiastes. "If," says he, "a serpent bite without hissing, there is no sufficiency for the charmer." 103. Showing that the bite of a serpent in silence is dangerous, i.e., if a suggestion or thought springing from the devil is not by means of confession shown to some charmer, I mean some spiritually minded person who knows how to heal the wound at once by charms from the scripture, and to extract the deadly poison from the serpent from the heart, it will be impossible to help the sufferer who is already in danger and must soon die. In this way, therefore, we shall easily arrive at the knowledge of true discretion, so as by following the steps of the elders never to do anything novel, nor to decide anything by or on our own responsibility, but to walk in all things as we are taught by their tradition and upright life. And the man who is strengthened by this system will not only arrive at the perfect method of discretion, but also will remain perfectly safe from all the wiles of the enemy. For by no other fault does the devil drag down a monk so precipitately and lead him away to death, as when he persuades him to despise the counsel of the elders and to rely on his own opinion and judgment. For if all the arts and contrivances discovered by man's ingenuity, and those which are only useful for the conveniences of this temporary life, though they can be felt with the hand and seen with the eye, can yet not be understood by anyone, without lessons from a teacher, how foolish it is to fancy that there is no need for an instructor in this one alone, which is invisible and secret, and can only be seen by the purest heart, a mistake in which brings about no mere temporary loss, or one that can easily be repaired, but the destruction of the soul and everlasting death. For it is concerned with a daily and nightly conflict against no visible foes, but invisible and cruel ones, and a spiritual combat not against one or two only, but against countless hosts, failure in which is the more dangerous to all, in proportion as the foe is the fiercer and the attack the more secret. And therefore we should always follow the footsteps of the elders with the utmost care, and bring to them everything which rises in our hearts by removing the veil of shame. Chapter 12. A Confession of the Modesty Which Made Us Ashamed to Reveal Our Thoughts to the Elders. Germanus. the ground of that hurtful modesty through which we endeavor to hide bad thoughts is especially owing to this reason, viz., that we have heard of a superior of the elders in the region of Syria, as it was believed, who, when one of the brethren had laid bare his thoughts to him in a genuine confession, was afterwards extremely indignant and severely chid him for them. Whence it results that while we press them upon ourselves and are ashamed to make them known to the elders, we cannot obtain the remedies that would heal them. Chapter 13. The answer concerning the trampling down of shame and the danger of one without contrition. Moses. Just as all young men are not alike in fervor of spirit, nor equally instructed in learning and good morals, so too we cannot find that all old men are equally perfect and excellent. For the true riches of old men are not to be measured by gray hairs, but by their diligence in youth and the rewards of their past labors. For, says one, the things that thou hast not gathered in thy youth, how shall thou find them in thy old age? For venerable old age is not that of long time, nor counted by the number of years, but the understanding of a man is gray hairs and a spotless life in old age. 104. And therefore we are not to follow in the steps or embrace the traditions and advice of every old man whose head is covered with gray hairs, and whose age is his sole claim to respect, but only of those whom we find to have distinguished themselves in youth in an approved and praiseworthy manner, and to have been trained up not on self-assurance, but on the traditions of the elders. For there are some, and unhappily they form the majority, who pass their old age in lukewarmness, which they contracted in youth, and in sloth, and so obtain authority not from the ripeness of their character, but simply from the number of their years, against whom that reproof of the Lord is especially aimed by the prophet. Strangers have devoured his strength, and he knew it not. Yea, gray hairs also are spread about upon him, and he is ignorant of it. 105. These men, I say, are not pointed out as examples to youth from the uprightness of their lives, nor from the strictness of their profession, which would be worthy of praise and imitation, but simply from the number of their years, and so the subtle enemy uses their gray hairs to deceive the younger men by a wrongful appeal to their authority, and endeavors in his cunning craftiness to upset and deceive by their example those who might have been urged into the way of perfection by their advice or that of others, and drags them down by means of their teaching and practice either into a baneful indifference or into deadly despair. And as I want to give you an instance of this, I will tell you a fact which may supply us with some wholesome teaching, without giving the name of the actor, lest we might be guilty of something of the same kind as the man who published abroad the sins of the brother which had been disclosed to him. When this one, who was not the laziest of young men, had gone to an old man, whom we know very well for the sake of the profit and health of his soul, and had candidly confessed that he was troubled by carnal appetites and the spirit of fornication, fancying that he would receive from the old man's words consolation for his efforts and a cure for the wounds inflicted on him, the old man attacked him with the bitterest reproaches and called him a miserable and disgraceful creature and unworthy of the name of monk, while he could be affected by his sin and lust of this character. And instead of helping him, so injured him by his reproaches that he dismissed him from his cell in a state of hopeless despair and deadly despondency. And when he, oppressed with such a sorrow, was plunged in deep thought, no longer how to cure his passion, but how to gratify his lust, the abbot Apollos, 106, the most skillful of the elders, met him, and seeing by his looks and gloominess his trouble, and the violence of the assault which he was secretly revolving in his heart, asked him the reason of his upset. And when he could not possibly answer the old man's gentle inquiry, the latter perceived more and more clearly that it was not without reason that he wanted to hide in silence the cause of a gloom so deep that he could not conceal it by his looks, and so began to ask him still more earnestly the reasons for his hidden grief. And by this he was forced to confess that he was on his way to a village to take a wife, and leave the monastery and return to the world, since, as the old man had told him, he could not be a monk if he was unable to control the desires of the flesh and to cure his passion. And then the old man smoothed him down with kindly consolation, and told him that he himself was daily tried by the same pricks of desire and lust, and that therefore he ought not to give way to despair, nor be surprised at the violence of the attack, of which he would get the better not so much by zealous efforts as by the mercy and grace of the Lord. And he begged him to put off his intention just for one day, and having implored him to return to his cell, went as fast as he could to the monastery of the above-mentioned old man. And when he had drawn near to him, he stretched forth his hands and prayed with tears and said, O Lord, who alone art the righteous judge and unseen physician of secret strength and human weakness, turn the assault from the young man upon the old one, that he may learn to condescend to the weakness of sufferers, and to sympathize even in old age with the frailties of youth. And when he had ended his prayer with tears, he sees a filthy Ethiopian standing over against his cell, and aiming fiery darts at him, with which he was straightway wounded, and came out of his cell and ran about hither and thither like a lunatic or a drunken man, and going in and out could no longer restrain himself in it, but began to hurry off in the same direction in which the young man had gone. And when Abbot Apollos saw him like a madman driven wild by the furies, he knew that the fiery dart of the devil, which he had seen, had been fixed in his heart, and had by its intolerable heat wrought in him this mental aberration and confusion of the understanding. And so he came up to him and asked, Whither are you hurrying, or what has made you forget the gravity of years and disturb you in this childish way, and made you hurry about so rapidly? And when he, owing to his guilty conscience, and confused by this disgraceful excitement, fancied that the lust of his heart was discovered, and as the secrets of his heart were known to the old man, did not venture to return any answer to his inquiries. Return, said he, to your cell, and at last recognize the fact that till now you have been ignored or despised by the devil, and not counted in the number of those with whom he is daily roused to fight and struggle against their efforts and earnestness. You who could not, I will not say ward off, but not even postpone for one day, a single dart of his aimed at you after so many years spent in this profession of yours. And with this the Lord has suffered you to be wounded, that you may at least learn in your old age to sympathize with infirmities to which you are a stranger, and may know from your own case and experience how to condescend to the frailties of the young. Though when you received a young man troubled by an attack from the devil, you did not encourage him with any consolation, but gave him up in dejection and destructive despair into the hands of the enemy, to be, as far as you were concerned, miserably destroyed by him. But the enemy would certainly never have attacked him with so fierce an onslaught with which he has up till now scorned to attack you, unless in his jealousy at the progress he was to make, he had endeavored to get the better of that virtue, which he saw lay in his disposition, and to destroy it with fiery darts, as he knew, without the shadow of a doubt, that he was the stronger, since he deemed it worth his while to attack him with such vehemence. And so learn from your own experience to sympathize with those in trouble, and never to terrify with destructive despair those who are in danger, nor harden them with severe speeches, but rather restore them with gentle and kindly consolations. And as the wise Solomon says, spare not to deliver those who are led forth to death, and to redeem those who are to be slain. 107. And after the example of our Savior, break not the bruised reed, nor quench the smoking flax. 108. And ask of the Lord that grace, by means of which you yourself may faithfully learn, both in deed and power, to sing, The Lord hath given me a learned tongue, that I should know.